You are indeed tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz and Teachers for Class War. It is the 11th of November, and today on the show we're going to be speaking with Pajaro Valley Unified School District Trustee Sandra Nichols, who is, a trustee, also a writer, a teacher, and a bilingual education advocate here in Watsonville and in Santa Cruz County. Stay tuned to Teachers for Class War.
You gotta work for yours. You gotta hustle from the bottom just to feed the poor. Said it's a class war. Said it's a class war.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Class conscious. Class conscious. Class conscious.
It's a class war.
See it loud.
Said it's a class war. It's a class war, it goes on every day. People getting paid in a crazy way. It's a class war. Said it's a class war.
Class war.
Monetary, mental, physical decay.
All right. So, Sandra, welcome to Teachers for Class War and Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I want to start off by asking you about the decision 9 years back to run for the school board, and why, as a lifelong educator, you decided to stand for election, to mount a campaign, as opposed to working within your department or becoming a union leader, or why the school board?
I was definitely looking for an opportunity to be more influential in the decision-making process. So when you ask me about becoming a leader within the establishment or running for office, 10 years ago I'd say, well, running for office is something I would just never do. However, I became connected with a political movement, and once I got involved with it, I really just couldn't stop. The movement was, I worked on the No on 227 campaign. Mm-hmm. That was, 227 did not eliminate bilingual education in the schools, but it significantly changed the way bilingual education is presented, and how parents actually make the choice of having their kids in bilingual education or not. So I was really involved in that campaign, and it felt good to be active and talking to people about the issues. And in the course of the campaign, I had the opportunity to hear a really an educational guru who has as his specialty the instruction of English to people who speak other languages. His name is Stephen Krashen, and he teaches at a university down in Southern California. I forget which one. But he came down to one of the schools in Watsonville, and he talked about, of course, he talked about the 227 campaign and how we could work productively, so that bilingual programs were preserved in the schools. And within the context of this talk, he admonished us as educational activists to get out there and take over the school boards. And I heard that message loud and clear. And I said to myself, I'm going to do that. I didn't know that school boards were elected positions. I really thought that a person like me that had been in education for 25 years would go down to the district office and volunteer. So that was really a misconception on my part. And
rather than having to mount a political campaign with supporters and right, cash and all that good stuff.
quite different than volunteering.
Yeah.
And I'll keep the story brief, but what happened was I did call the district office when one of the trustees was quitting, and I found out a little bit. Every time I contacted the district office, I found a little bit more. The trustee that was quitting wasn't in my trustee area, so I thought, I'll just wait, and I'll keep my eye on the trustee that lives down the street from me, and when she quits, I'll try to get her seat. And I originally, I I didn't have to wait for very long before she quit. Mm-hmm. And then I sought the endorsement of the school board. They appoint, first they try to appoint somebody. And I wasn't the only one who applied. And I was interviewed in public for that, for the seat by the trustees. Interviewed by the six sitting trustees, excluding the one whose seat I was hoping to take. And nobody was appointed that night. The trustees couldn't decide. And so it went to an election, a special election. And I ran in that election, and I learned how to do an election. But I didn't win. But a year later, that seat came up. It was due for its regular election cycle. So a year later, I knew how to run for election, and I had also connected with community members on several issues that were happening in the schools right then, and I won that election, and I've won three elections now. This is my third seat on the school board, and so I owe it to Dr. Stephen Krashen, who inspired me to want to be on the school board more than anything else.
And to take over the school board.
To take over. Well, one of the things I learned
as part
was
of the movement.
That one person cannot take over a school board. One person can certainly get elected and get a seat, but they only have one voice in seven. Mm-hmm.
And I will get to that.
Yeah.
Jessica, welcome to Teachers for Classware.
Thank you. Sorry for being late. I don't think my mic works.
Yeah.
We're glad to have you.
Likewise. Feeling is mutual. Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're up. You're on.
I can't hear it.
So. Mic is good.
Okay. Cool. Go ahead. You sound like you're on a roll.
Well, so, what were the issues back in those, 9 years ago? What are the issues that you mentioned the proposition and the fight for bilingual education and the limited discourse around realistically, like you said, the proposition shaped, the dialogue, but what are the other issues that were facing schools at that point that made you decide to mount a second campaign after, the first one didn't work out so hot?
Right. I really thought that bilingual education would be one of the hot topics in PVUSD.
Seems about right.
It does. It seems like a natural. But I called up the six trustees and asked them, what do you think are the most important issues right now, things that I should study up on?
Mm-hmm. School lunches.
More like school lunches. One of the most controversial things that was going on was the attempt to build a third high school.
Ah.
It was that issue that eventually became a huge issue in my campaign. And, of course, I had many other things that I cared about in education.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd been a teacher for so long, there were 50 other issues that I could have talked about. But the community was truly engaged in conversation about the high school, mm-hmm. the development of the high school.
Of Pajaro.
Yes, Pajaro Valley High School. And there were Coastal Commission hearings during that time. And I connected with people who also were doing advocacy regarding the construction of the high school. My point of view at the time was that there was a better site for the high school. And I had arrived in that debate really late. I was a latecomer.
Mm-hmm.
And the decisions were practically all made. And they were going down a road to build the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And while I wanted to talk about the other alternative sites that I thought were feasible, certainly all of the trustees, not all of the trustees, but five of the seven trustees didn't really want to discuss it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Those were decisions they'd made in the past, and they didn't want to revisit them. However, I did connect with people who wanted to have somebody on the school board who was willing to talk about alternatives. And alternatives and open conversations with the public became one of my issues. I connected with people who were energetic, and we learned how to run a campaign, and my husband was tons of support on that. If my husband had said, you can't really run for election and win, mm-hmm. you know, I would have read a book instead.
Hopefully a written one.
maybe that.
Well, so it sounds like one key part then was the idea of bringing a different voice to the board, but also one that allowed for some transparency and some more public debate in terms of contact with parents and teachers.
Exactly.
Getting different voices involved in the debate. What have you been able to do in the past 9 years to make Pajaro more transparent? Because it's a notoriously challenging process, district, place.
To put it mildly,
challenging, yes.
Well, I think of problems that face the school district or the things that confront us as being one challenge after another. And the fact that the school board has a trustee who truly believes in communicating no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 31 years I worked as a language specialist,
mm-hmm.
and the whole role of a language specialist is to improve people's ability to communicate, mm-hmm. whether it's their pronunciation, their vocabulary, their grammar, their style of speaking. It's the whole purpose of language is communication. So it's always been one of the things that I consider an area of my expertise. And I believe I'm known on the school board for being willing to listen to anybody. I believe I return every phone call.
Hmm.
And now when people write us forum letters that they send to all trustees, I don't necessarily send a personal letter back. But I read those letters, and I communicate with people who call me up personally, though, either email or on the phone. I believe that people recognize that in me. I remember one time during the campaign, it got back to me that a man had said, "I called her, and she didn't call me back." And the man, I didn't get to hear who it was, so I was never able to talk to the man. But I remember one time I called a person's house in response to a phone message probably 5 times. There was no message machine, and I never reached a person at the phone. That must have been him. I know that people still have issues with transparency in PVUSD. That problem has not been completely eliminated, however, I believe the superintendent that we have now is a very open, honest communicator, and I like her. I find her easy to communicate with, and I think parents do too.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope teachers have an opportunity to talk to her too.
I haven't directly yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find her to be willing.
Mm-hmm.
To talk to people at all levels, in the school system and on the outside of the school system.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd probably find it a pleasure having a conversation with her.
It's interesting. Sometimes it even feels like the distance is so great, I'm not even sure what messages to her would be important. Like, do I talk about the variety of different mandates that were getting thrown at us? Do I talk about how they forgot to tell us to stop one and start another, and so we were trying to do both even though they were contradicting each other? It's like, I don't even know if this is going to fall on dead ears or if this is important to her. Who's making these decisions? Sometimes it feels like it just comes from up there so disheveled, and we can't really pinpoint where things are coming from or where we would even go to complain or praise or anything else.
So this comes as no surprise to me, what you choose as the issues of concern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you want some advice about
please.
Approaching a person such as a superintendent, I think go to her with a good idea and some enthusiasm to make that idea happen in a way that makes the schools better. I would advise any person to start out like that, because I think that's what works for administrators. They're interested in hearing new ideas about what can we do? What can we do that's better?
I'm going to be really honest with you. Mm-hmm. That's part of what scares me. Sometimes what I feel like is happening and what I've heard coworkers talking about, coworkers who have been there a lot longer than I have, is that somebody sells a magic bullet and the district just jumps on it. And before we know it, we're just shooting in all directions and nobody knows what's going on. And so I almost just want to pick one and stick with it and just refine and refine.
I think that phenomena of which you speak, of the flavor of the day in education, is not unique to PBUSD.
I would agree, yeah.
And as a matter of fact, the whole country kind of swings back and forth by, with things like a whole language versus using phonics to teach children to read.
And absolutely.
It becomes a whole country buying into, oh, this year we're going to do whole language. Things seem to get real popular in one state and another state imitates it. It's surprising when you talk to educators in another state that they have issues that are almost exactly the same as ours.
Right, right.
Even though the states have their own school systems, there's there's a lot we share in common with teachers in such places as Alaska, etc. You know,
which brings up the title of your most recent article is another education gimmick on the way. Where
which gimmick was I writing about that day?
Yeah, appears to be the race to the top or the race to the no child.
It does bring that up. Racing which to the top.
Well, so, you know, in terms of a nationwide picture or policy or, you know, the ever maligned No Child Left Behind, which actually seeks in its language to overturn some of that quick shifting and seeks to at least
substitute testing for all those techniques we had before.
Well, right. But at least in the text, it says that it should be only scientifically proven, you know, scientifically evaluated processes should be used. And, you know, you have these catchphrases or this, the magic bullet. What is out there?
Let me interject something on that line, because I think I've got a good one for you. Yeah. So No Child Left Behind wants to be only research approved and things that have been tested. Well, one of the things that's been studied is what really matters the most in a child's education? And what would you think it would be?
Getting their basic needs met before they come to school.
Okay, so readiness.
Yeah.
Readiness.
Or
any,
engagement.
Any other ideas and how engaged the students are?
Relevance, whether it's appropriate and relevant to their...
Well, in study after study, it's not how ready the kids are or how relevant the material is. It's the teacher.
I could see that too. Teacher preparation, teacher enthusiasm.
Yeah, and the connection that the teacher makes with the student. And the teacher is not recognized as an expert in No Child Left Behind. So No Child Left Behind doesn't practice what it preaches.
Of course.
Not even that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that it did. Okay, that's what I said, in at least in the text.
Right. Well, and also, who's evaluating? I mean, who's in charge of enforcing this sort of research-based standards? Because, I mean, we all see that what it looks like it does is just pass money towards textbook companies and pass money towards specialists who are employed by those textbook companies or testing services.
Yeah. The issue of hired consultants to put into place techniques that you're forced to use. It really doesn't feel good to put money into that.
I mean, it does if they work, you know. I'm willing to give something a shot and stick with it and refine it, but what I worry about is that there's not any actual enforcement of the text saying that this is research based and we know for a fact that this works across the board for various populations.
Yeah, you can't. You just can't count on anything like that, can you? And you can't count on the way No Child Left Behind is based on the test them until they drop mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that was tried and studied?
Pray tell.
In Texas. And it's become referred to as the Texas miracle.
Hmm.
Because when people look at the data that No Child Left Behind is based on from Texas, it seems like a miracle that the test scores went up.
And so what's the deal? I mean, what's the catch?
Well, there are many reasons test scores go up. And one of the things has to do with children that are eliminated from the school.
Oh.
A lot of people were pushed out.
Right.
To make that data.
Gotcha.
Low-scoring students being pushed out elevates the test performance when you average the kids that remain.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't be 100% sure that this particular story happened in Texas, but there was a school district who was having kids retained in one grade. I believe it was 10th grade, because they were facing an important test in 11th grade that they had to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids were retained in 10th grade so that they wouldn't have to take that test.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe they were promoted past that grade so that they never had
kidding.
To take the test
so
or forced to drop out.
Hmm.
So that kind of manipulation of the student population affects the test scores and looks like a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no miracle. It's a travesty.
Gotcha.
So we're talking about the Bush years. We're talking about the roughly your tenure on the school board, where we've seen proposition after proposition, superintendents come and go with processes that may or may not have been as transparent as a lot of folks would have liked. Lots of consultants, plenty of cuts, and at least one or two secession attempts, more or less. We can get into some of those politics if you like, but with all of that that's gone on between the seven of you, how effective do you feel like you've been in what you set out to do 9 years ago?
I think that really depends on what year you're talking about.
Fair enough.
Because when I got on the board, I was definitely not a board leader. I was a new person. And many times I was part of a two-vote minority opinion. And I did wonder how I could disagree so frequently with the majority of people on the school board. After a couple of years, one of the trustees left, and we got a new trustee, Rhea DeHart. When Rhea DeHart was elected to the school board, there were three teachers on the school board for the first time. Rhea DeHart, me, and Sharon Gray were all lifelong teachers.
Hmm.
And it was great working on a school board with other teachers, people who knew firsthand what the schools were really all about.
Right, right.
What it was like to work in them.
What it was going to feel like to receive the mandates that you all were putting through.
Oh, yeah.
Well, just having spent the day with kids the day before
right,
the meeting
right.
makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Both Sharon and Rhea were retired teachers, and I've joined them now.
Mm-hmm.
For 8 of my years, I was getting up and going to class the next day, and that was
a big deal. That's a big job.
Yeah, I was told ahead of time, you can't do that. It's impossible
mm-hmm.
to stay awake until midnight debating education issues and be at work at 8 o'clock ready to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I did suffer from a lack of sleep.
Thus the coffee.
Yeah. But I didn't find that to be impossible. I found that to be stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
So after there were three teachers on the board, I no longer felt like I was in a minority.
Mm-hmm.
And we often formed got a majority vote on things.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years later, two new trustees were elected, and one of them most often had the same viewpoint as I did.
Mm-hmm. Convenient.
And the other one often did.
Mm-hmm.
So a majority was a new majority was formed on the school board at that time. It didn't always work out that the votes came down the way I thought they would. There were some horrible surprises.
Mm-hmm.
But we did. I thought we made progress on some real social justice issues.
Can you give us some examples of what that looked like?
Yeah. During that time, secession came to a head,
mm-hmm.
and was thwarted effectively.
So, I mean, Danielle and I both know what you're referring to, but for listeners who might not be aware of local politics, can you talk about that secession?
Okay, so secession in the Civil War was when the
That's
South.
That's not what I mean.
I want to make sure that people understand the secession issue.
Fair enough.
In the Civil War, the South wanted to be its own country. And in PBUSD, one of the areas in the school district, the Aptos area, wanted to be its own school district. So secession is really a good word for that.
Mm-hmm.
In this permutation of secession that came out in about 2003, it wasn't called secession anymore. You know, there's a technique where if you don't get your way calling it one thing, you change the name.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it was renamed reorganization.
Clearly.
But few were fooled. Mm-hmm. And it was shut down soundly. And another issue that came up is part of No Child Left Behind dictates to school districts that if you're going to take money for No Child Left Behind, when the kids get to be in high school, you have to release the students' names, phone numbers, and addresses, in other words, their contact information, mm-hmm. to military recruiters for
right.
the purposes of recruiting students for the military.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a clause that parents could opt out of that, but the school district had to tell the parents about that clause.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a few sentences in a 1,000-page document tell school districts. Most people didn't know at the time.
Right.
The school board did some research on that, and it was decided to make that statement to the parents so clear that everybody would know.
Mm-hmm.
And the school board insisted that the statement be placed,
mm-hmm.
the right to opt out, mm-hmm. of that military recruiting system. Make the statement right on the emergency card, the one document every parent
sees
and fill out,
right.
and the one document that the school will track you down,
mm-hmm.
if you don't have an emergency card. And after that happened, it was like tenfold the people that opted out.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you guys.
Yeah. So that was an awesome success, mm-hmm. from those years. And there have been others. And even in the context of the current day, I find myself on a school board where very often I am with a single other trustee on issues.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to count the votes on that, it'll be 5-2 every time.
Hmm.
And it has been that way quite frequently. But in that context, I managed to get appointed to the English Learner Task Force,
mm-hmm.
and participated with a committee to rewrite the English Language Learner Master Plan. which I see as a really positive development. So even in that context of being in the minority, I was able to do productive work, although it has been very difficult during the last, how long has it been? It seems like forever. 3 years, I guess.
Which brings us to the budget.
Yeah. The budget interferes with that good news of the wonderful things that have happened.
Yeah, right. And that moment of hesitation where, how long has it been since everything went to hell? Forget, how long is that? When did that happen precisely?
Really 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how is it that we can just say 2 years ago so clearly? I mean, I'm not antagonizing you, but I'm interested. What is that event? What is that shift?
Well, I know the economic hard times didn't come on in a single instance.
Right.
But I became aware of them in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
I became aware of them in February of 2008. That's a year and a half ago, not 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it was happening before I was aware of it.
Uh-huh.
The administration put a freeze on purchasing freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, if I have the date right, February of 2008. And I knew things were bad then.
Mm-hmm. So you hadn't seen something like that in your 20 plus years of teaching?
Nothing like this has happened in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. No, nothing like this. You know, school districts have good times and bad times. It goes up and down. I mean, we had an economic crisis that I thought was really bad in 2003. I was board president. I remember another trustee saying to me that I got stuck with the year of the budget crisis. Well, mm-hmm. we didn't know what was coming.
Right.
But in 03, we had difficult budget times, but it didn't last very long, and it wasn't anything like this.
Mm-hmm. So as a teacher, I have a feeling that, I mean, I wasn't there in 2003, but I have a feeling I know what you're talking about just because of my circumstances are what they are. Can you spell out the differences for listeners? What did it look like in 2003 versus 2009 or 2008?
Okay. I'm not going to be able to tell you the details, but I believe we had a very short list of layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that while teachers received layoff notices, that by the time summer started, those teachers had been reassured that they were still going to be working for mm-hmm, PBUSD. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% positive that no teacher got laid off, but
it was very few, if it was any.
Yes. I don't think any of them got laid off.
Uh-huh.
When September came, I think the teachers who wanted to continue working for PBUSD were still working.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean we didn't reduce teaching staff, because you lose teachers through retirements and through people moving away.
Right.
And if you don't fill those positions, then fewer people get laid off, or possibly nobody.
Right.
So now it's not only has this budget been way more intense from the very beginning, but it's gone on and on with more and more bad news,
mm-hmm.
getting worse and worse. Like four times a year, we'll get more bad news.
Mm-hmm. So as a board member, what does that look like for you? I mean, you get a memo saying what? Saying you need to make cuts, or, I mean, what does that look like?
Usually it comes first in the form of the governor has made a speech about what's happening in the California budget, or mm-hmm. On a national level, something happens. And so you hear about how California is going to default on its loans, and mm-hmm. and you think that's going to affect us,
right?
Or you hear that money's going to be changing from one category to another, and
mm-hmm.
So you hear about things that happen in the economy that you know are going to make things worse for us,
mm-hmm.
and then we do get a memo. tallying up the number of dollars less that we're going to have in mm-hmm. future years. And eventually that's followed with proposals about how could we cope with it? What are the possible... Back in March, we were presented with various scenarios. Budget. They were called the first blush, the second blush, the third blush.
Mm-hmm.
Probably heard those terms, but they were just scenarios of different ways of making the budget work. With a, I know people are curious. You know, is it PVUSD or is it the state of California or is it the federal government?
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's kind of a perfect storm at this point, but at the same time. I mean, on the ground, we hear things like when compared to other districts, PVSD is getting a relatively high amount of money coming in and yet is at some point squandering or mismanaging or, you know, it's very unclear, but it's like we're coming out on the bottom even though we were handed a roughly equal amount of money or a relatively high amount of money in the beginning. And I don't really know how to fact check on that. That's just what we're hearing.
Well, those rumors reach my ear mm-hmm. ears also.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I know they've been voiced. I mean, yeah. I know we've had guests on who have voiced them at union meetings, certainly.
Mm-hmm. I know that I can assure you that the struggles that we have mm-hmm. are certainly not 100% of our own making. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's saying right. That's true.
The economy in the country is the worst it's ever been. Nobody disagrees with that. It's worse than during the Depression. I mean, there are only a few things better now than in the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the state of California, when you think about how far in the red we are in California, it's like horrifying that I live in California in the United States, two entities that are mm-hmm. going bankrupt,
right,
mortgaging their future, and the school district cannot allow itself to go bankrupt. There are things in place that require us
mm-hmm.
to produce a budget that balances.
Mm-hmm.
We can't say, okay, we're just going to be $2 million in the red next year. The state of California can.
I mean, what do the consequences there look like? Like, what would happen? I mean, what a state takeover, or what is that threat?
The threat is that the state of California would appoint somebody to take over the school district. And some people say, well, let them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll do a better job. You know, I'm open-minded to that possibility. And if somebody from Sacramento could come down here and rescue us, I say, let them come. Mm-hmm. Please. Please. Stop this madness and let them come. I'm all for having knowledgeable people from the outside help us out, give us guidance, and help us fix the problems.
Mm-hmm.
I am totally into listening to advice from experts. And what it always goes back to for me is why I'm doing this. I may be on the school board because I got the fire in my belly about Proposition 227, but I'm still on the school board to make education better for the students. And it's something that I feel like I owe the students, because when I was I grew up in California, and when I was a girl in the California public schools, they were the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, how great it is I live in California, where the schools are the greatest in the country. And I was thinking about being a teacher, And I was also thinking about going away to college. And I was told, go to college in California, because if you get a California teaching credential, you can use it in any state. And that's not the same if you get your credential from another state. Mm-hmm. You can't come to California because California's educational system is so great.
Right.
And look where we look at the mess we've gotten ourselves into.
Well,
over,
certainly
over
no
this
longer
period
true.
Of time. It's no longer true. Proposition 13 changed it, mm-hmm. and I've got the charts to prove it. we used to fund our schools adequately, mm-hmm. and our schools were great. And after Proposition 13, if you look at it, I have a chart that shows a comparison in the adequacy of funding in states all over the in California compared to states all over the country, mm-hmm. and the way they fund their schools. And in the chart, California goes down starting just when Proposition 13 took effect, and it never comes back up. Mm. It comes down until it reaches median, and then it sinks into the basement. And that's where it has been ever since. You know, one of the two or three worst school states in terms of adequacy of school funding, adjusted for inflation.
Mm-hmm. So we have just a few minutes left here, and I'd like to ask you to do a kind of a best case worst case exercise of sorts, mm-hmm. where let's start with the worst case. The budget keeps getting worse. It might be the most realistic scenario, but we continue with more cuts. We continue with pink slips as the norm, the seasonal pink slips, and are looking at, you know, having to continuously trim where we've already trimmed and slash where we've already slashed. What can Pajaro do to cope and survive and not just look for the day when the funding's restored, but deal with doing more with less on a permanent basis, not on a like next year it'll be better, we'll move around some chairs and change money from this account to that account and, you know, make it look good on paper and get through July, but
long-term, yeah. Sustainability.
Well, people have referred to Pajaro as the Titanic, impossible to change course, slow-moving huge vehicle plowing into an iceberg.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily mean rearranging the deck chairs in that way, but
it but brings to mind the Titanic.
Yes,
and I see it as a really big school district with plenty of things where you can roll up your sleeves and try to take action to improve, because we do have many challenges, and I don't think any one person could possibly solve all of those problems. However, I'm a person that likes to feels like the human condition is that we make mistakes. Everybody does. Even the most gifted make mistakes. But what the gifted does is they learn from their mistakes.
Right.
And I'm on kind of a campaign to help the school board think about their mistakes in ways that don't make a person feel bad for having made a mistake, mm-hmm. but embrace a mistake as an opportunity for learning.
Okay.
And I think that we have made mistakes, mistakes that should be, the open door to learning for us. And an example of a clear-cut mistake we had was hiring a part-time superintendent, mm-hmm. especially one that had already quit because she was mad at her board majority, mm-hmm. of which I was a member. Okay, the board hired her back. She didn't want to work full-time. So therefore, we made the decision. I was a no vote on these things, mm-hmm. every one of them. So I don't feel like I'm learning from my mistakes, but but I was proved right on that. The board hired a deputy superintendent and contracted with this person, And then it came to light that we were going to have to cut him loose when the budget crisis started. And we couldn't cut him loose because he had a contract that, mm-hmm. that extended into the future. The school district ended up paying him for months after the school board had voted to eliminate his job. That's an example of a mistake that the school board made that if we hadn't made, we'd be somewhat better off. Would we be solvent and not have to cut any positions? No. That mistake didn't cause all this. Mm-hmm. That's just one mistake, and it wasn't the only mistake.
Right.
Well, and not just the, what it looks like on paper, but what that looks in terms of trust with parents and teachers and rank and file folks who are seeing, you know, a lot of legitimate gripes and a lot of hand wringing, a lot of worry, but also see an example like that. And think about that same question of mismanagement or what the top is doing with the money and how the decisions are being made in transparency and all that.
It doesn't really instill confidence.
Exactly. Well, so the best case.
You know how the trustee elections turned 4 years ago, right?
No. Go ahead.
You don't know what factors influenced the election and the board that's sitting right now? Okay. That board majority, of which I had the pleasure of serving, mm-hmm. was a little too progressive thinking for the superintendent, Mary Ann Mays. And she did not like our decision about military recruiters and opting out.
Mm-hmm.
And she became angry with her board majority and quit in public, insulting the four of us who had never been rude in public. Never challenged her in public. It was private that any challenging was going on. And that's I always felt like if you're going to be hard on the superintendent, you should do it in the superintendent's office when you're with the superintendent by herself, not out in public at a school board meeting. Well, this superintendent quit in a school board meeting in front of everybody and possibly rolling TV cameras, too. It was really, really insulting. And where was I going on that? What was the question? Oh, so the community was being told by the superintendent and her friends that these four trustees were the problem. I wasn't up for re-election, but Rhea and Sharon were. And they were unseated by trustees who were funded by a movement to get rid of the trustees the trustees that were considered troublemakers. They used the word micromanagers. Well, at the time, I was working full time.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of time for micromanaging.
I was not micromanaging. I felt So unjustly accused.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, I was in the board majority and proud to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not sticking my nose into the business that was not mine.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another board election in November of 2010 here, in just about precisely 1 year. And several of those same seats or several, there's a possibility for the shift.
All of the trustees that were supported by the Committee for Good School Governance are up for re-election. Well, one that was supported in the previous election is still on the board and will not be. But the four trustees that were, three were new in that election,
mm-hmm.
all were supported by the Committee for School Governance. I leave the word good out of the title when I remember, and then one that's been on the board for 20 years.
So given that election cycle, and not speculating about specific trustees or
right.
the specific race, the other side of the best case worst case idea is that if the board shifts dramatically again and you find yourself in a position to again get things done, get
not always lose the boats.
not the consistent 5-2. Yeah. What are some initiatives that we might see? What are some proposals? What are some of the things
I'll give you an example.
You said that one person can't change it, but what if one person could change it? What would you do?
I'm going to give you two examples very quickly. Previously, when I was, trustees can't meet with three other trustees. That would be a majority, and that's a Brown Act violation. But I used to get together with two other trustees and work through things like the budget complexities and problems. In 2003, we worked on that together, and we made a budget that the whole school board eventually bought almost all of the components of the budget that we proposed. Mm-hmm. And it was very worthy. It was a very good budget. That's the kind of things trustees should do. They should get together and think of a solution that nobody's come up with yet and bring it to the school board. They should do that. I think that we can look forward to more of that when new trustees are seated. I think this election that's coming up is going to be a really hot election. I don't know who of the four trustees that are up for election, I don't know whether they've decided to run again or what. But I know that there will be a hot election where teacher activists are going to play a really important role. Teacher voices mm-hmm. are one of the groups that has suffered with this school board majority. Have you felt that?
I wasn't there before this majority, so it's hard for me to document a change.
Mm-hmm. And I think that teachers experienced a change when there were no longer three teachers on the school board.
I can imagine, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's intimidating to talk to people who aren't teachers. It's about issues that are in the classroom because we're used to being marginalized in certain fashions. And so to talk to somebody who you know has been a teacher or is currently a teacher is, of course, you just feel like your words are going to fall on receptive ears. So, yeah,
and I
can imagine that.
And I think it's a valid feeling mm-hmm. because teachers do understand what each other go through.
Right.
Well, and who else ends up on the school board? Are there local business owners? Are there parents?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yes.
And who might we know
things.
Of that's going to be running? What are people's interests? I mean, if you're not a teacher, what is your interest?
There is nobody who has thus far declared that they are going to attempt to get on the school board during this next upcoming election.
So in terms of, I mean, you're mentioning business owners. Like what? I can see why I would. I could see why a principal would. I could see why people who are already super, super invested, like career lifers invested in a district would advance into those positions. But why a business owner? Who else in the community? What do they have at stake? What do they stand to gain?
Do you want the cynical answer? I always thought that being on the school board advantages a business person. Who wouldn't like to say, buy insurance from me. You can trust me. I'm a trustee.
So it's just a PR stunt?
Well, I don't think it's...
I mean, it's a lot of work.
I think it's awful hard work for just the good publicity.
Right.
However, there is a certain amount of community standing that you get from being a school board mm-hmm, trustee. Mm-hmm. And that does help a person mm-hmm. in their business.
Mm-hmm.
It helps a person in the connections that they are able to make with legislators. Mm-hmm. And
it is a elected position. It is elected office. And
yeah.
It has been used
it opens
springboard
doors.
As well.
It does. I got to go to Washington, D.C., and I argued with Margaret Spelling in front of 1,000 people because I'm a school board trustee. Mm-hmm. I would never have been able to do that.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. And the best part was that a friend of mine happened to be tuning into C-SPAN, and she was recording because she knew
was
I
great.
Was in Washington, D.C., and she recorded me confronting Margaret Spelling about privatization movement to make schools less public.
Good for you.
Yeah. it was awesome. That was the pinnacle.
Well, we should wrap up. We're out of time.
I was going to say, yeah, I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad you were here. And I think that
so
might
much.
Be the high note we go out on. Yeah.
Indeed. If the pinnacle was, you know, getting to argue on television, then my hope is that the again, and not to pin everything on an election cycle, but the board were able to find. I don't imagine we're going to be any better off next November than we are right now.
That's not what I'm hearing.
Not what I'm hearing either.
Year I heard you might get laid off. This year I'm hearing we're reducing our staff. Absolutely, certainly. So, yes.
Oh, I think
scary.
Things are going to continue to get worse in terms of money. All we hear is more bad news. It's just not letting up at all. I think the solution is try to wait it out. Try to survive in these hard times. Try to supplement your children's education.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And, stopping the wars would probably help, too.
Hey, if we weren't spending our money on the war and bailing out the bankers, maybe the schools would have more money and we wouldn't have to feed our schools the crumbs.
You sound like a troublemaker.
I hope to be a troublemaker and qualify for some more talking on very, very C-SPAN and radio free radio.
Freak radio.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sandra Nichols, for coming in. And listeners, be sure to check Sandra's blog.
Actually, it's not a blog. It's a website.
Oh, okay. A website, sorry.
Okay, education-matters.com. Matters is spelled with two T's.
Oh, good.
Says the teacher.
And we're going to go out with a track by Frank Zappa called Why Johnny Can't Read. Thank you.